Welcome, everyone. If you want to get closer, it's easier to throw the rotten fruit. We have lots of space up here. My name is Rodney Gibbs, and I'm the moderator for this panel on location-based entertainment. Thanks for coming out this afternoon. I've got a good panel representing a lot of different perspectives on location-based entertainment, including from the OEM side to the artist side and something in between. So hopefully have a good discussion and show you a lot of light on this stuff. And Motorola is not the sponsor of the panel, but they get a nice little plug.
Thanks, appreciate it.
So I'm with Maze Entertainment. We're a game developer of handheld and console titles, and also with IGDA, International Game Developers of Austin. So an enthusiast for a lot of this stuff. So I'll set the stage and introduce our panel for that, and then we'll hand off and speak to each of them, and we'll have questions at the end. So why we're here is because location-based entertainment is growing. It's getting bigger and more common, and there's several factors contributing to that. One is that mobile is becoming far more pervasive. It's got increased penetration. The devices have better graphics and audio, improved wireless carriers and accessibility. And the development costs are relatively cheap compared to console development or other type of game development. And in the last 4 years, it looks like the sales and the revenue have gone up about tenfold. So it's really getting, much more common and pervasive. At the same time, traditional gaming, in my eyes, is becoming more pervasive and more accessible to a larger swath of the crowd. A lot of the game developers and entertainment people are not so focused as they were on the 16-year-old boy. He's like a crack addict. He's not going anywhere. So a lot of us in the game world are focused more on the 35-year-old woman or grandmother and granddad. Or if you look at the way Nintendo markets its things, they don't show teenage boys. They show adults with a cocktail and a Wii controller. New York Times had a great article last year about how all these retirement homes can't keep Wiis in stock, or they can't get Wiis because all the old folks like to play it. And the gaming is not so much in the dark anymore. It's coming out, and it's becoming gaming for game's sake and also simulations and educational uses. And then you tie that into the rise of social networking, of course, which is getting very common and easy to do, and people who aren't hardcore geeks like us are getting more comfortable with sharing their thoughts, with getting peer reviews online, with letting that stuff guide them. To me, all those things are kind of this confluence that's helping make location-based entertainment really come up in the world. One is that they can't keep the eyeballs on the TV or the screen, so marketers and people who are in it to get customers are looking for ways to engage people where they are, be it in the airport or the street or the festival. And at the same time, people are getting more comfortable using their mobile devices as part of them. There's a guy in town named Gary Chapman who's a lecturer at the LBJ School who does internet technology and theory. Who told this great story about giving a lecture to the AARG, or sorry, messing up my metaphors, the American Association of Retired People, AARP. It's a totally different group, the AARG. But he's talking about how technology is changing the way we age and the way we'll get old and infirm. And how there's technology now that can test an old person's who's living alone his urine, for example, automatically, which sounds kind of weird, but it tests for sugar content and things. So that if they're having their sugars out of whack, it automatically dials 911 or next of kin, things like that. And as he was giving the talk, he's saying, one of the guys in the audience, he saw this old guy at front was shaking his cane and getting very agitated. And at the end, the guy, that was his first question, and the guy was really kind of pissed and said, why is all this talk about technology and all this obsession with Wi-Fi and internets and tubes and all this crap? And Gary, very nonplussed, said, sir, your grandfather might have said the same thing to your father about electricity. Why are you kids so obsessed with electricity? And now, of course, you can't imagine life without electricity, just as now increasingly for a lot of us, and it's becoming more mainstream, can't imagine life without our laptop or our cell phone or those things. So as those become more common and pervasive, finding ways not just to do a utilitarian aspect of it, to make your call to that kind of thing, but actually to entertain us or to sell us things or to engage us is going to become more and more common. So for that, trying to set the stage, I'm going to hand it over to our panel. Let me introduce folks to you quickly, and then they can add more about that if they like. To my left is Andy Mathis, who's here from Austin with Motorola. And he has over 8 years' experience in the wireless industry on a variety of aspects of it. He currently manages the business solutions and emerging tech team with the MotoDev marketing development team. And he works with a lot of companies and market segments in LBS, mobile commerce, mobile office, and productivity. And before that, he was working with managing wireless Java applications and mass market handsets for the Motorola iDEN product team. And he's a good local boy. He's got a BA and an MBA from the University of Texas at Austin.
You're actually going to say that. All right, thanks for the plug.
Next over in line is Catherine Herdlich, who joins us from New York City after a hellish flight in at the wee hours this morning. And Catherine's day job is director of production for Game Lab, which is based in New York. It's a casual game developer. Does all types of games, including Diner Dash, which a lot of you might have heard of. And then her other job that I believe the Game Lab kind of enables her to do is she's co-creator and founder of the Come Out and Play Festival. That is an annual festival in New York and in Amsterdam. Is that right? Or?
New York 2006, Amsterdam 2007, New York 2008.
Okay. It hopscotches. Come Out and Play Festival that is about location-based entertainment in its purest form, about getting people out from behind their computers in their houses in the streets for entertainment. And then on the end, we have Marta Vieira. Close enough. Sorry, she warned me I would butcher her name. Who is with Y Dreams North America. And Y Dreams is a company based in Portugal, but Marta moved here to Texas last year to head up their North American division. And Y Dreams is an innovator in location-based gaming, both for entertainment's sake and for marketing's sake. And she was involved with all aspects of the division, from mobile game development and distribution to business strategy, marketing, and product management. And now, as I said, she's here in Austin leading up their biz dev stuff for their North American arm. And she has a master's in marketing management from the, how do you say that, Marta?
That's the Vlerick Management School.
The Vlerick Management School in Belgium? Any Vlerick Longhorn Rebels? No. Okay. And also a BA in communication from the New University of Lisbon. So we're going to have each of our panelists speak for a few minutes, and then we'll open it up to Q&A after that. So first up is Andy.
Thanks for joining us today. Just to kind of segue from what Rodney was talking about as far as the phones being used for more than voice, I mean, that certainly plays well into our business as an OEM, and it's Motorola. Because after all, we want to be working with the developer community to actually leverage the technology on our handsets. And certainly we have been, I think as an industry, have been looking to see how when I would say location was actually going to become a reality, location-based services. And I think we've been hearing for many years that it's almost about to happen. And I think, you know, the good news is certainly from a North American perspective, I think it's safe to say that location-based services have arrived. This is really based on a number of factors. I mean, so, you know, you have two of the top four major carriers that have been supporting location services from 2007 on into 2008. That's that being Verizon and Sprint. Certainly we're going to see GSM carriers, jump on board as well, throughout the rest of this year, which really will make it, you know, a fairly pervasive, at least from a carrier perspective, technology, GPS, certainly. And then on top of that, you know, from a Motorola perspective, I can say that, you know, the vast majority of our CDMA devices are going to be GPS enabled. And certainly with the carriers coming on board in North America, more and more of our GSM devices will be GPS enabled. So in essence, you know, you can say that the majority of our devices are going to be, location-based services capable, by the end of this year, which I think is definitely a tipping point. So great. So the technology is becoming available. That's a good indication, but are people actually using it? We have a good start. Certainly navigation, turn-by-turn navigation, is being used by over, you know, tens of millions of users at this point. And those users are paying $10 a month. You know, so the carriers are certainly happy, about that. It's a good start. It's a good start. I mean, I think that, you know, we still have a ways to go. Certainly when you talk about Europe and Asia Pacific, as regions that, you know, consumers of location-based services, it's more of an emerging market. There's a number of reasons for that, and I won't get into them, but, it's certainly worthy of note that, you know, they're starting to dip into it. I mean, Europe is big in the personal navigation device market. And, you know, I think that that's going to segue well into to more mass market location-based services. Another point worthy of note, I think, is that, you know, from a device perspective, really GPS is being enabled on, you know, even down to the low tier handsets, right? So it's not like you have to go out and pay $500 for a phone that has GPS in it. I mean, really, you can get devices for as low as $100 now that have GPS in them, and therefore you can access those services on those devices. Again, Western Europe and APAC, it's a slower evolution, but it's certainly happening there as well. Also, to add to the fact that GPS is enabled on our devices, we Google just announced Cell ID, Google Maps Cell ID based applications, which is global. Which certainly is a big move by Google and represents a shift to a truly globally accessible service on your mobile phone, on any mobile phone. And then to further add to that from a technology perspective, Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi access is going to be pervasive on mobile phones more and more so. And there are companies that actually enable location based on your Wi-Fi access point proximity. And so between Wi-Fi, Cell ID, GPS, you're going to have a very ubiquitous location experience on your phone and are already starting to get there. So great technology is there as well. From an OEM perspective, things get really interesting now because we're seeing a lot more than just navigation. Really there's a huge variety of LBS applications, available now. And certainly to my left, the panelists here will talk about that more. Their own businesses that are doing just that. Anything from social networking to weather to mobile office, say, you know, field tracking, mobile commerce and games and fitness, really the whole gamut of market segments really are accessing location. So another shift worthy of note is the fact that, you know, LBS is no longer a separate application category. It's really a feature across all the market segments, which again, from an OEM perspective, is very interesting. We want to see the developer community really leverage the technology on our mobile phones. So we definitely see that as a good progression. To highlight a couple solutions that are near and dear to my heart, you know, representing the OEM is actually a local company here, Bones in Motion. They're an Austin-based company. They have a fitness solution that actually you can track your workouts directly from your phone. Whether you're running, cycling, biking, driving for that matter, you can track wherever you're going. And you can actually share your workouts either directly from your phone or online. They actually have a partner in Runner's World. And so you can download your workout from your phone and actually share where you were and talk about, hey, this is a great route or this is a bad one. And you can actually show them where you ran that day. And it's definitely a nice motivator for fitness. I haven't jumped on board to that whole thing, but in theory, it's a nice motivator for fitness and definitely a great user experience in leveraging location on the phone. Another one I think that is also worthy of note, and there are many, by the way, again, to our left, though, I don't want to steal the thunder, but, Ulocate, they have, a widget, location-based services widget platform. And so why does that matter? Well, because if you develop, you can develop a widget in a matter of 2 to 3 days, whereas, you know, applications in general maybe take, you know, 2 to 3 months at best, right? And so anything from a Burger King widget, you know, locate the closest Burger King to, you know, your AOL instant messaging solution to StubHub ticketing. There's a whole variety of services that have already been developed on this platform in a matter of weeks, and they're just getting started. And so I think, again, this is further indication that, you know, you as end users, all of us as end users will have a whole range of services available to us on the mobile phone, and things are just starting to get interesting. And so with that, I will turn it over to Marta.
No, yes. I just need to.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right.
So I'm number three.
Three, right?
Yeah. All right, that's good. Thank you. All right, so hi, everybody. Thanks for showing up. That's great. my name is Marta Vieira. So it was close enough, Rodney. Vieira, very good. I head Y-Dreams North American office. We're a Portuguese company. And we've been in the market, in the business of location-based entertainment for quite a few years now. The company started in 2000, and the background of the founders goes to environmental engineering on the one side and ubiquitous computing on the other side. So our fate was pretty much sealed then. So we developed... Oh, I'm sorry. All right, let's speak up. We developed our first location-based app in 2000. It was a map channel for Vodafone in Portugal. And from then on, we really went to the gaming side of it. So we developed our first location-based game in 2002, and we've been doing it ever since. So we've really seen the market evolve quite a lot. On the other hand, another thing that we got from the background of our founders was their love of interactive installations and how that was a new way to explore content, namely in terms of environmental analysis. And we found a market for that kind of application in the advertising and marketing world, because that was a market that was always looking for the latest and greatest, that was willing to take risks and willing to do something fun. So I'll try to show today three cases that I hope bring those two things together, just to give you a better idea of what it could look like. So we're going to start with Undercover 2. Undercover 2 is the follow-up to Undercover 1, thank God, because otherwise it would have been a silly name. Our first game, Undercover 1, was the one that came out in 2002. It was a very simple location-based game. It was an SMS game. It was very much time-driven and location-driven, and it used Cell ID. And with the evolution of technology, we wanted Undercover 2 to be everything that Undercover 1 couldn't be. So it was the hardcore gamer's paradise. It was a real-time massive multiplayer online game. It allowed for hundreds of people playing at the same time. It was all about creating clans, creating groups of friends that conquered territories, that had missions that are very much, again, location-driven, and so on. And that was a really, really good experience for us, because it really showed us the potential of what location-based games could be. At the same time, it was very early. So we got very excited because we just saw the possibilities. And you're going to hear a lot of developers that are going to tell you the same thing, how they hoped that everything was going to go so much quicker, because it was promised to us almost that the technology was going to be as quick as our imagination. And ultimately, at the time, I'm sorry, Andy, there's going to be a Nokia reference in here. So Nokia Nokia had just launched their Bluetooth puck, their GPS puck that could be linked to any phone with Bluetooth. And we thought that was going to pick up really quick, that it was going to be almost like the earpieces that were to 2005, what the iPhone is to 2008. They were everywhere. Like, everybody was crazy about those things. And we just thought that GPS was really the next move. Unfortunately, it wasn't really as easy as we thought it was going to be. But that history will tell us the rest of that story in terms of what we saw here, the development of handsets, technologies, and so forth. But at the time, in 2005, and always business-oriented, we thought it was a great idea, since we had the virtual world and the connection with the real world, that we could bring in some players with us. So we thought, you know, in the game, we always had the idea of creating shelters for players. So we thought, you know, it would be really cool if those shelters could be real physical locations with brands, with shops, and so on. And we just thought that made a lot of sense. And we pitched that idea to some of the partners that we work with in the advertising world. And we got absolutely nothing. It was just, we got a little bit of disbelief. It was, so you mean that the players are in the game, but they're also in a real location and we can link the two up? It was just very, at the time, it was just very weird. This is, again, early 2005. So that is our first experience in this direction of trying to bring the two things together and trying to link up the two worlds with little success. So next up is a case we have Lex Ferrum, which is... I'm sorry. Technology. All right. We have another example of something that we developed again for Nokia in 2003, used for the launch of the N-Gage in Portugal. So here what we have is proximity gaming. So it's a game that uses Bluetooth. It's a game in which you can challenge nearby players and fight them. It's a really fun game because Bluetooth at the time was, again, very new, and people were just learning how to use that technology. So during the game, they found out that the connection could be broken through distance. So if they happened to be losing their fight, they ran away, and people who were winning followed them. So this took place in a hotel in the south of Portugal, very nice place. And since we controlled the environment, we were able to create physical locations inside it. So for the game, you were able to go pick up weapons from the armor, which was in, say, floor one, you know, and people would have to move there. And once they got close enough, it would initiate a new menu in their phones and would allow them to get weapons from it. At the same time, they could get potions, and they would go to another location in the hotel and, again, interact directly with that location. So it really opened up the possibilities as an event kind of solution. So here is another link up between the two. A third example of location-based entertainment is the Adidas eyeball. So this is something that we developed for Adidas in 2006 for the World Cup in Europe. And these were two giant structures that just traveled all around Europe in about a dozen cities. And what we have here is what we like to call an interactive playground. So basically, I'm going to show you a video to give you a better idea. It's filmed in Barcelona. This one is one where you get to measure your speed and see what it have or not, what it takes to be on the team, which is done with sensors. A couple of informational applications, the countdown to the final, which is everything that mattered at the time. The ability as well to interact with the ball via SMS. Here, a simple quiz in which you pick your answer by standing on one side or the other of the ball. So really a mishmash of different interactive applications that create a space that we like to think animated, spaces that were really empty spaces in the city because we needed enough space to put these giant things in, and that attracted a lot of attention also just for the sheer size of it, but also for how much fun it was to play with this as well. Are we good in time-wise?
You're fine.
Okay, no, just don't want to get I want to keep going. So basically, here we also had the opportunity to tailor the experience to the different countries that we were in terms of language, in terms of the team that you were supporting when you screen for your team, and so forth, making it a really good example of a traveling kind of solution. So that's it in terms of cases, just meaning to give you an idea of what's possible, of what can be done. But in terms of trends, what we see is that we've gone from just a very passive kind of world where the first location-based services were navigational, and as such, advertisers and brands just pretty much wanted to see their hotel, their shop, their gas station show up on a map, to understanding that, you know, if people are nearby, you can actually go to them and try to grab them. And that can actually become scary. I came across this quote that I thought was interesting, how it was described to advertisers. These people are a captured target. The consumer is already in your place or business, and you just have to grab him. So I don't know. I don't know how it sounds to you. To me, it sounds a little bit scary. And this is what we've seen in the trends of location-based advertising and location-based marketing. It's the Bluetooth antenna kind of thing. Push media, try to get as many consumers as possible. A solution where you can't really opt out unless you turn off your Bluetooth. And if you need it for another reason, it's really not an option. So you just get people bothering you constantly. And we've been trying to explain to advertisers and to our partners that we don't think this makes sense at all. It's just because for us, what makes sense is something that is meaningful to the person, that is interesting at that point in time. And the real interest here is how to create that situation. And we've been trying to do it, namely, in the same direction that Andy just mentioned of the widget platform. So that is something that we've been collaborating with, creating a system architecture for Telefonica in Spain of just putting that in place and having people create their own widgets and choose what is interesting to them and try to link that up with some kind of marketing that makes sense for them. And that is their choice, and giving them the choice to opt in and out at any given point in time. And that's pretty much it. That's a good overview. I'm sure that we're going to go back to some of these issues later. So I'm going to let Catherine take the stand here.
Thank you, Marta.
Hi, everybody. I'm Catherine Hernblick. I'm the director of production at New York City Casual Game Studio Game Lab, and I'm also one of the co-founders of the Come Out and Play Festival for Street Games based out of New York. Creating location-based entertainment. So I was thinking in anticipation of today's panel about location-based entertainment because it's something that I find very interesting. I started the Street Games Festival I worked on because of the interest in it. You know, we all were sort of making these games in our spare time, and it's really hard to capture an audience. And we thought, what if we get all of the games together in one weekend and then everybody can play each other's games? And, you know, a lot of times capturing a large enough audience to play very ambitious games is hard. What's interesting though is that we don't have funding for this festival. It's something that we do on our own out of our, you know, in our spare time. Nokia definitely does have a lot of interest in these types of things. They were a sponsor of our first year.
We should talk about that.
We're doing this on purpose.
But you know, it's an important question. And so then I started thinking, well, let me take a step back before I start figuring out why is it worth finding funding for? I mean, this isn't a new thing. This has existed for a long time. Location-based entertainment is not new, and people have been making money on it for years. This is not such a new thing. What is new is technologies. And so I thought, well, let me take a step back. Let me think about what do I think about, when I'm creating a location-based entertainment, or what do they have in common? What are sort of, if I'm going to categorize location-based entertainment experiences, what's one way to do that? So I thought, well, there's some questions that you ask yourself, some design questions that you ask yourself. You ask, where? Location-based entertainment. So the first thing, obviously, is where? Location. You know, where do I want it to be? Also, what? If it's going to be an entertainment, what's potential entertainment experiences. So, you know, I want it to be on a mountain, and I want people to be able to go downhill skiing and snowboarding, and, oh, snowboarding is new, and I have to add a half pipe, terrain parks. Additionally, part of the what question is technology, obviously. What sort of needs to go into it? So, oh, you know, I need a chairlift, I need snowmaker, I need, to build the trails, I need to groom the trails, we need to find a way to take tickets. Similarly, now location-based entertainment, same set of questions where, okay, I want it to be in Times Square because this is a captive public space with lots of people, or, you know, urban environments are great for these things. That's sort of, the downside is that the GPS technology a lot of times is better in rural areas, and yet you have more people wanting to engage in these things in urban areas. So I want a game in Times Square. I want to be able to tell stories. I want people to be able to feel that they're connected to the space by seeing something really big on the screen in front of them. I want it to be simple, low barrier of entry, but still using the devices that everybody has, the cell phone. So sending, you know, SMS messages, and who? So we've traditionally been designing entertainment for people. But at the Game Developers Conference this year, I don't know if anybody in this room was there. There were two different sessions where creating games for dogs, one an alternate reality game for dogs to play in dog parks and on Facebook with their owners. And another, these were ideas in the game design sort of, oh, what would be so awesome if we could do this? Another, it also came up in Jane McGonigal's rant, where she was discussing, you know, we need to have games where we can make fetch more engaging, more meaningful. I mean, and it's true because we've been talking a lot about the cell phones. Everybody has cell phones, but everybody's dog also has a GPS chip inside their fur. So this is, you know, sort of who you want to design for. Also how. So, you know, I talked about what the technology is involved. We need all of these things. We need to make an entertainment for an audience in a space that has these ingredients to it in order to follow through on the entertainment. And how, you know, to build technologies, to build a chairlift, to build a snowmaker takes money. To make a game that's using the GPS inside your cat takes money. To do these things takes money. And a lot of times you have the promise of a commodity, you know, a subscription base or a point of sale, and it's promised. I mean, so there's a lot of different ways. There's marketing money, taking risks. There's finding a way to pay for making these things is a real challenge for people that are looking at this, in terms of, you know, the first question being, I want to make an entertainment for a location. I want to change the relationship of people that they're having with the environment around them, versus just, I want to do something cool with technology, or I want to leverage this brand because it's sort of related to the space. This costs money. So all of this costs money. The festival that I run, the Come Out and Play Festival, we don't bring in any money, and it's come up. We're entering our third year, and we originally just wanted to bring together a group of people who are interested in these location-based games, particularly, but entertainment more largely. And the question is now coming up when we go and we speak with student groups. They say, okay, great. How can I get a job doing this? And we don't really know because we're doing it in our spare times. I make casual games during the day. So I say, get a job that pays and finance your passion. It's kind of wonky. So I think we need a new approach. And so I started thinking, you know, if back to sort of the first slide. This is not new. Location-based entertainment isn't new. And I started thinking about sort of history. If history is going to be any indication of the future, I started thinking, well, what's something else that revolutionized our relationships with our space around us that also made people a lot of money? Well, Pong created a whole industry, and it changed people's relationship with a gas station, which is pretty amazing. And this is the promotional thing to get people to buy. It also created a lot of jobs, created a lot of money for a lot of different people. Myself included. I mean, in many ways, you know, my own casual game industry is the birth of this, but it's proven high profits. Okay. This is a sell point. Proven high profits in location after location. Why? I mean, it was created to do that, but it was a risk. It was really created, with a question of, can we do it? Can we do this? Is it possible? Is it possible to take, you know, the Odyssey, what's in the home, and actually make a bigger standalone thing with better graphics, more engaging, and people will give us a quarter to play it, and they'll keep giving us quarters. And they did. Hell yeah, we can do it. We can do it better now. We have better technologies. We have history to teach us lessons. We have lots and lots of grown-ups wanting to play. I mean, yeah, it's like, this is not the gamer, you know, the little gamer 15-year-old boy stereotype. It's not true anymore. Although we do have nerds. So I started thinking, okay, the categorizing thing isn't really working for me. I'm trying to think of why was Pong so successful? It's because it was made by people that weren't like, okay, I'm the technology guy. I'm the designer guy. They didn't even necessarily set out to make the game, but people were, nerds are curious. They're so curious. So if you tell them, if you start them with the cell phones, these are five different cell phones, three different makes. They all have cameras. It's five cell phones. It's five cameras. It's five messaging devices. But they'll go beyond that. They'll be like, well, what else can we do? Let's put something more beautiful on it. Nerds are very curious. They can, you know, they'll make Bluetooth devices to communicate with the phones, capture you. They'll find a GPS location and find that cache that's there at the other end. Nerds are curious. And so then I thought, well, but artists are also a really important, component of understanding how to make an entertainment that's focused on the location. Artists are in the world around them, and they are so curious. Or they're also curious, but they're also sincere. Sorry. They're sincere. So they, how are they making money? They make money, you know, the nerds are making money because their technology is huge. Obviously, you know, here we are in Austin. It's huge. There's lots of money for technology. Artists get a lot of money. This is the Blast Theory game. They're putting a GPS device on a bicycle so you can play a game while riding a bike, which seems not very safe to me, but it's based on a sincere desire to sort of find a new way to explore the world around you. Find a new way to think of Pong. What does Pong mean now that we have new technologies? And how can we sincerely change the way people interact with the space around them? Well, we can have them move a giant inflatable pond. Artists are getting money. Where are they getting money from? They're getting money from grants, from government institutions, grant-based grants like this in the city of St. Paul, Minneapolis, St. Paul. They're also getting money from universities, from working with universities. Blast Theory has done a lot of work with universities. And so they're coming at it from one angle. And then I thought, well, here's another angle, entrepreneurs. And these are three different segments I should add that we had representation at the Come Out, that we've had representation year after year at the Come Out and Play Festival. We have artists. We have nerds. We have people who make unplayable games because they're so focused on the technology. People who have beautifully high concept games that would be better with a little technology, but they're a little bit more lofty and just thinking just about the space. Entrepreneurs are interesting because they're kind of at the intersection of all of this. And I would challenge entrepreneurs to come up with ways where they can still follow through on the vision of the nerds and the artists, to make something that's not just marketing based, you know, that's more based on a deep, rich experience. We have so much more at our fingertips, so many more ways to tell stories in a location where you don't actually necessarily have to imagine the location. And yet we're still talking about social networking and depending on user generated content, and those can be part of it, but I don't think those should be the guiding principle. We can tell deep stories. The Go game has managed to leverage corporate team building. They're not alone. There's user generated things, but a lot of work goes into it. They really craft an experience. But again, like event based games are not the end all be all. It takes a lot of time and money to make an event based game. So Yellow Arrow, you know, they found a way to commodify these stickers and use the ubiquitous SMS texting system to allow sort of an entertaining experience where people can share their stories of their spaces around them. Not unlike the Blast Theory game, and yet a little bit more staying power in terms of making money. And then entrepreneurs are creative. They find creative ways to sort of address their attractions to sincerity and to nerdy curiosity. Area Code in New York City has done a lot of marketing games, and they've also been looking in ways that they can create totally new games for this new platform of location entertainment, where it is original, it remains original content. And I think that, you know, as we move into this, I think if we provide something really amazing for players, we don't need to push market them. We don't need to send them a message. We don't need to tell them that there's a sale at Payless. I think that we can actually, if it's good enough, they'll pay for it. I mean, people do want to be entertained. I was in the airport for 4 hours last night. This is JFK. It's horrible. Change this space. It's boring. We're there. We're stuck there all the time. You know, they're trying. There is like a television showing CNN. I'm sorry. I don't want to hear about Obama versus Hillary anymore. There's Wi-Fi hotspots. I don't really want to check my email. I'm leaving work. You know, I'm leaving New York. Change this space. This is a place where people are already, just like people were already at the gas station. They didn't know that they wanted and needed to be entertained and have a more engaging experience there, but they did, and they paid for it. And so there are still spaces that we can explore with curiosity, with sincerity, and with creativity. And I think if we make something really great enough, I hope, if we're creative, you know, the entrepreneurs, the MBAs, they can help us come up with, you know, ways that we're actually asking people to pay for the content, for the experiences that we're designing to change the relationship with the space around them, not just to make life easier, but to make it more fun. I think that we'll find that, but I hope, because I would love to only work in location-based entertainment, but I don't want to... I don't want to have to deal with brand identities. I want to create a new brand. Anyway, so that's it for my part.
Woo! Yay! Thanks, Catherine, Marta, and Andy. So open up for questions in just a moment, but I'll start off with a couple. So not to pick on Andy too much, but we have, it seems like a big issue comes up is carriers, and how do you get these things out there when, you know, when you're trying to fight with AT&T or Sprint just to get your product on the device, much less then to get it known to people and get it out there. So I'm curious if Andy or Marta in particular have insights on that. I mean, it seems like there's a hunger for this thing, but maybe our carriers are behind the curve and realizing that they can monetize this and actually make something out of it.
You know, I do get that question, and you're not picking on me. I mean, I think it's a very valid one. You know, I think it depends on the region, right? In North America, I think we all know that it's a relatively closed environment. It's challenging for a new developer to get to market. The sales cycle could be anywhere from 12 to 24 months to get a carrier on board. And I think, you know, for those of us who've tried to do that, we've experienced it. And we know that. I think that you have to be creative. I think that, you know, this, the widget based platform is a way to get to market a heck of a lot faster. That's one example, right? Where you develop a widget in a matter of a couple of days and you work through a company like Ulocate, who's already driven, the go to market channel with the carrier over that 24 month period, right? So you basically skip that 24 month period to market there. I would say also, off portal is becoming, another way to actually get to market. It's outside of the carrier deck. And so you're not necessarily dependent on the same kind of approval process that you would have to depend on going through the traditional channel. And then I think also, when you go outside of the US, certainly in Europe, and I know Marta has some thoughts about this, we've talked about it, Europe and Asia Pacific, you have more of a retail market there. And when you have that direct to end user relationship, you don't necessarily have to go through the carrier in those scenarios. And then finally, and this is a bit more far reaching, but it's worthy of note. As the networks become more open, as 4G becomes a reality, Wi-Fi, WiMAX. I mean, I know it, Wi-Fi is here today, but WiMAX is evolving. I know that sounds far away, but before we know it, you know, we're going to have an all IP mobile network. And when that becomes a reality, you know, it will be the true mobile internet. It's not going to be a walled garden, the way it is today. And that is going to make a huge difference for the developer community getting to market, as well as for the end users having a variety of services to play with. So,
mm-hmm. I would definitely agree. My personal experience goes both to the North American market and to the European market. And for me, the North American market has been the true walled garden. It is. We were talking about how I feel very imprisoned in what I can do with my phone, which is a CDMA-based phone, and how limited I am to what I can get on my phone, even if it's my own content, even if it's my own game that I've just developed and I'm trying to test, I can't get it on my own handset. The idea for me is a little bit ludicrous. In Europe, we work with GSM networks, ultimately a lot more open, and we have a lot more options for off portal. But there is one question that remains the main issue is how do you pay for that content? So, payment has been, for us, we believe that operators have been, very important, not only in the distribution of it, but in the guaranteeing of the payment. Though they do take a big chunk for it, of course. The solutions for doing it off portal are still not entirely accessible to users. So I think that is also one of the areas where we would really like to see development is in alternative payment methods for this off portal content.
So Catherine, when you do yours with the Come Out Playfest, I assume you know you're getting lots of feedback because there aren't a lot of technological barriers, and it's out and it's very focused on this weekend, and you know people are out there. But Marta, you had mentioned before that when you have this buffer of technology, and you really don't encounter the user unless you're out there with a clipboard and standing by the Adidas ball. And how do you? Cause it seems like such a big part of it is the community and is the interaction, the feedback. But if it's not a two-way communication, I mean, how do you get that information back and how does it affect your development if you're kind of like broadcasting stuff out there, not sure if it's being received or not?
Mm-hmm. It is hard for us in terms of community games, especially we were talking about how mobile massive multiplayer games are curious kind of game because you don't tend to spend hours on your cell phone at one go. You're not going to play your multiplayer game for 3 hours a day or 4 hours a day on your phone. When you come home, you're going to go to the more powerful platform where you get the best user experience. So you're going to turn to your consoles. You're going to turn to your PC. So the handset is going to be something that you do 5 minutes a day when you're waiting in line at the bakery or you're taking a bus downtown or something and you have that time to spare. So it ends up being like little bits of time. And our whole thing has been how to create a community sense, how to get feedback as a user, how do you get feedback from the game? Because we do get some feedback from our users, even in terms of the data that we just get from the game. But how does the user get feedback from the game? And for us, it's been very important, and it's been the basis of our latest game, Wall Street Fighter, that Andy knows rather well. Wall Street Fighter is all about the action continuing even when you're offline. So even if you're offline, you can be challenged for a fight. And the player who's challenging you is not going to encounter a block. He's going to be able to fight you in terms of your safe profile. So your three attacks and your three defenses, they're going to kick in, and the player is going to have automatic feedback. He's going to know whether he's won or not the fight. And you, when you sign in, you're going to be able to see how that fight went, what came out of it, and you're going to be able to see a replay, thus creating this feeling that you don't have to be online all the time to be able to play in a multiplayer game, but you can still be a part of that community and get feedback back from the game. So I would look at it from that perspective.
Yeah, I would agree too. I mean, I think if the experience is compelling too, I mean, you'll find time to play it. Yeah, I mean, it is kind of in the open spaces throughout the day, right? Maybe your commute or maybe when you're stuck in an airport. But if the experience is compelling, you make time to access the entertainment. I mean, I think that's and that is how we actually can start to generate some revenues from this too, right?
Yeah, and just to sort of also respond to that, and also responding to the carrier barrier, we see a lot of times that come out and play games that are made for the cell phones, where they actually hand out cell phones, which is ridiculous because these are being made ostensibly because everybody has a cell phone. Mm-hmm. And we've also seen games. I played in one at Come Out and Play in Amsterdam where I was working with my, I was using the loaned cell phone, to play the game. And I would be cautious of games that are played, so asynchronously that they're just laid on top. So then they're not actually location-based entertainments. They're small console entertainments that you carry in your pocket with you wherever you want. And that's cool. I just think it's selling ourselves short, I think, because when I played this game, it was cool. I did, suddenly the space became a lot of virtual objects that I was running around picking up because the GPS knew where I was, but I also wasn't looking to cross the street. I was endangering my personal self, and I was not engaging with the community around me. I think that it actually removed me from the world that I was in and put me in this very compelling, virtual game world enabled by the technology, but, they weren't meshed in a way that made me feel like I would make time, mm-hmm. to speak to what Andy's saying, where I would make time to do it.
Any questions? Someone have a question? Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. I'm just repeating it quickly. The question is, how can we use the technology to make us more engaged with the space versus less and insulated and just focused on our little screen? Okay, we have a mic for questions. I didn't know that either.
I'm. Do you have an idea? I don't know. I mean, the first thing is to think about, what is in the space already? Well, there's a lot of data already in the space. There's Wi-Fi there. There's a lot of people there. Maybe it could be something like put a little RFID chip in your ticket. And then if you want to play the game, if it's late, you can somehow sign up to play in the space around you. Could be somehow some sort of spotting, guessing. There's a lot of betting that could go on. Is this playing going to be late? Are they going to change the gate? Yeah. I mean, there's a wealth of location-based information that could be used, not to start writing a design document in front of you vocally, but, I think there's a lot of ways to be creative where we'd think about the experience we want to design before we think about the technologies that are available. Because if we just think about the technologies that are available, I think we will just lay something on top.
There's actually a pretty interesting use case. It's called geocaching. And it's an adult treasure hunt, and it's becoming it's still a niche, but it's a global phenomenon in the sense that what people do is they create a story, and then they set a treasure in a certain spot, and you can use your GPS enabled device, no matter what it is, and to find this article. And it's incredibly social. It also definitely acclimates you to your environment, since after all, you're searching through, you know, your neighborhood to find this little treasure in the middle of the woods somewhere, right? And so it can be, you know, very much about the, you know, bring you into the environment as opposed to closing you out.
And you actually don't need a GPS device to do that. You can do letterboxing, which is from the 1700s. And it gives you, you know, treasure hunts, you know, and it actually, I've used the letterboxing website to find hiking trails, you know, when I'm traveling that I wouldn't know about otherwise because they're not big enough. You can like share, you know, but that's an intersection of, you know, using the internet or GPS or, you know, hiking trails. It's definitely a really compelling experience.
Another question. Yes, sir.
So we've heard about kind of where we're going. We've heard about 14 and all that. On the flip side, we've seen these kind of temporary setups, whether it be a weekend at Mountain Bay or in the Buddhist Ball. Is there something that's going to bridge, you know, between that gap? Is it going to be, you know, is David Buster's going to finally, you know, they can implement this permanently so that no way to go, whether we're going to play basketball, I can play that, or
the question is, will there be more permanent structures so it wouldn't be so ephemeral? It wouldn't just be set up for a festival or a weekend or a sporting event, but it'd be freestanding.
I hope so. I'll get started on that one because that's been a challenge for us as a location-based developer. Is how do you make it scalable? How do you make it playable everywhere? Because I've seen amazing examples of stuff that you do on a weekend, that you put 10 people together and that you play, stuff with real physical items in the real world that you go to, etc. And for us, the challenge has been always, how do you scale that up? How do you make that interesting, for instance, Sprint or Verizon, because they do have a nationwide network. How do you make that interesting? So that has been our question at all times, and that is what makes it really difficult. For us, it's been a lot about, again, not making use of animators or real life people that help you through it, letting go of the items, and just creating very, very simple interactions. And trust me, we've gone from the first one where we used Cell ID and it was, again, nationwide, we managed that much, but it was very work intensive. We had points of interest all over the country and we created that ourselves and we related missions to them. So it was just, it's incredibly hard to scale that to a territory like North America or all of Europe. And then we used maps and embedded points of interest to create that kind of content that is very location based. And that is more interesting, but at the same time, it can be complicated or easy depending on how you play with it. We made it complicated and we learned from that. And the last time we did it, it's location based at its most simple form. So in our latest game, the location based element that you get is as you travel around, the background of your game changes. So it's a business oriented game where you play with all these characters that are lawyers and a bunch of people from the business world. And basically what you get is you're seeing out of the office in which you're having all these fights and all these things happening. You have, it sounds weird like this. I should give it a little bit more background. Basically you see the setting of the city that you're in. So if you're playing here in Austin, you're going to be seeing Austin in the background and you're going to be, being able to compare your high scores with local people. And you're going to be able to challenge local people as well. And then when you move to another country or to another city, you get that background as well. So you have zones. It's very light in terms of location-based content, but it makes sense to people. And we find our feedback so far, it's a really good intro to location, very soft core kind of intro to location. But it gets the idea out there. So yes, that has been on our mind. I don't know.
Do you have anything to add, Catherine?
No, just no.
Yes, in the middle.
Does anybody have any anecdotal things based on nonprofit, like fundraising or anything else like that? I'd also be interested if anybody's had to pay to join the games, if anybody's tested that. But I would imagine, you know, other, you know, aside from like a corporate model, like Adidas or something, there might be an LB that's been used for Amnesty International or something like that. question is, but have you had LBEs with international participation where, let's say, the main technology is housed in the U.S., but then people in South Africa or Brazil are also participating via mobile device?
So the question is international... Two questions. So one is nonprofit usage of LBEs, and then the second one is international usage across borders.
Right. Like, say the main players are in the actual space, physical space,
mm-hmm.
but then they're an example of where people are playing there and interacting with people internationally.
Okay.
I mean, there's lots of sort of examples, I think, that I don't know that well that come to mind. I mean, there's World Without Oil, which was an alternate reality game funded by, I think, like a PBS type of a place. So I think that, you know, there's the nonprofits that we're seeing that might be funding these are probably still more comfortable in entertainment media already. And knowing that it's a way to teach things. Mm-hmm. So I think that we'll see that transition into, just as we have with the serious game movements in video games. I think we'll see that transition.
What about the mobile phone interaction? Are any of you familiar with using that in terms of the world without oil?
It's a lot with the Games for Good stuff, but that's more single player or online play with others. But yeah. I don't know about mobile.
I can't think of a specific example.
Anyone in the audience know? You've stumped the crowd.
And in terms of people interacting with people around the world, I mean, there's all kinds of art. You know, Ken Goldberg. There's a lot of art projects that have sort of tried to do that, where you do something in one place and it affects the real space somewhere else.
I mean, the only thing I can think of, and this is a diversion, but, you know, there's the Red phone. There's this Red product, you know, initiative, right? And I mean, we came out with a Red phone that, you know, a certain percentage of the sales went to cancer. I know that's not what you're talking about, but I mean, I wonder if there's an extension you could do from that. That's actually not a bad idea.
Yeah. How to turn one laptop per child into a location-based game.
That's right.
Yes. We have a question at the mic. Yes.
I think it's a really stimulating conversation. I feel like what might be lurking behind it is sort of the puzzlement of, you know, why haven't we yet, or are we going to arrive at the killer app that mixes real stuff around us with what's happening on our mobile device? And, you know, we're kind of scratching our heads about that. And I've been in this area for a few years myself. And I think one of my observations about it is that when we talk about nerds, or we talk about people that are really interested in phones, part of the interest is that it does take you out of where you are, that the internet is this sort of territorialist space you can go to, and you're no longer locked into a specific identity or geography. And so it's sort of a perception battle among a lot of things, I think, that is a challenge here. And I don't have any specific wisdom about it, except that there are certain practices in the real world that people engage in. And if there can be a sort of digital product that seamlessly slips into those normal practices, that's probably going to be where the solution or the killer app lies.
I would argue that we have a shot of maybe some insight at what may become the killer app for location. And I think navigation and points of interest, because I think that a lot of other things can flow from that, like location-based entertainment, right? I mean, a game could, you know, leverage navigation in any number of ways, right? And so I know that it's not there yet. It's not the killer app yet, but it's the best we got. It's the best indicator that we have of what it might become. So,
yes.
Yeah, killer app. I love hearing about the killer app. Every year I hear about the killer app in LB, and every year it's the next year. So I can tell you for sure it's going to be 2009.
We have time for one more question. Anyone have one more? Okay, then we have a very bad location-based game to play, which is called you need to fill out your response form, which is very peculiar to this location we're in. They really like feedback and like to know how things were. So please do that. Hand it to the people on the way out. I want to thank our panelists, Marta Vieira, Catherine Herdlich, and Andy Mathis very much. And thank you for coming out.
Thank you, Rodney.
Thanks.